3. The Hero and the God. The standard path of the mythological adventure of the hero is a magnification of the formula represented in the rites of passage: separation, initiation, return, which might be named the nuclear unit of the monomyth. A hero ventures forth from the world of common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from this mysterious adventure with the power to bestow boons on his fellow man. Prometheus ascended to the heavens, stole fire from the gods, and descended. Jason sails through the clashing rocks into a sea of marvels, circumvented the dragon that guarded the golden fleece, and returned with the fleece and the power to wrest his rightful throne from a usurper. Aeneas went down into the underworld, crossed the dreadful river of the dead, threw a sop to the three-headed watchdog Cerberus, and conversed at last with the shade of his dead father. All things were unfolded to him: the destiny of souls, the destiny of Rome, which he was about to found, and in what wise he might avoid or endure every burden. He returned through the ivory gate to his work in the world. A majestic representation of the difficulties of the hero task and of its sublime import when it is profoundly conceived and solemnly undertaken is presented in the traditional legend of the great struggle of the Buddha. The young prince Gautama Shakyamuni set forth secretly from his father's palace on the princely steed Kanthaka, passed miraculously through the guarded gate, rode through the night, attended by the torches of 4 times 60,000 divinities, lightly hurdled the majestic river 1,128 cubits wide, and then, with a single sword stroke, sheared his own royal locks, whereupon the remaining hair, 2 finger breadths in length, curled to the right and lay close to his head. Assuming the garments of a monk, he moved as a beggar through the world, and during these years of apparently aimless wandering acquired and transcended the 8 stages of meditation. He retired to a hermitage, bent his powers 6 more years to the great struggle, carried austerity to the uttermost, and collapsed in seeming death, but presently recovered. Then he returned to the less rigorous life of the ascetic wanderer.
The Buddha's enlightenment is the most important single moment in Oriental mythology, a counterpart of the crucifixion of the West. The Buddha beneath the tree of enlightenment, the Bo tree, and Christ on Holy Rood, the tree of redemption, are analogous figures incorporating an archetypal world savior, world tree motif, which is of immemorial antiquity. Many other variants of the theme will be found among the episodes to come. The immovable spot and Mount Calvary are images of the world navel, or world axis. The calling of the earth to witness is represented in traditional Buddhist art by images of the Buddha sitting in the classic Buddha posture, with the right hand resting on the right knee and its fingers lightly touching the ground. The point is that Buddhahood, enlightenment, cannot be communicated, but only the way to enlightenment. This doctrine of the incommunicability of the truth, which is beyond names and forms, is basic to the great Oriental as well as to the Platonic traditions. Whereas the truths of science are communicable, being demonstrable hypotheses rationally founded on observable facts, ritual, mythology, and metaphysics are but guides to the brink of a transcendent illumination, the final step to which must be taken by each in his own silent experience. Hence, one of the Sanskrit terms for sage is Muni, the silent one. Shakyamuni, one of the titles of Gautama Buddha, means the silent one or sage Muni of the Shakya clan. Though he is the founder of a widely taught world religion, the ultimate core of his doctrine remains concealed, necessarily, in silence.
One day, he sat beneath a tree, contemplating the eastern quarter of the world, and the tree was illuminated with his radiance. A young girl named Sujata came and presented milk rice to him in a golden bowl. And when he tossed the empty bowl into a river, it floated upstream. This was the signal that the moment of his triumph was at hand. He arose and proceeded along a road which the gods had decked and which was 1,128 cubits wide. The snakes and birds and the divinities of the woods and fields did him homage with flowers and celestial perfumes. Heavenly choirs poured forth music. The 10,000 worlds were filled with perfumes, garlands, harmonies, and shouts of acclaim. For he was on his way to the great tree of enlightenment, the Bo tree, under which he was to redeem the universe. He placed himself with a firm resolve beneath the Bo tree, on the immovable spot, and straightway was approached by Kamamara, the god of love and death. The dangerous god appeared mounted on an elephant and carrying weapons in his 1,000 hands. He was surrounded by his army, which extended 12 leagues before him, 12 to the right, 12 to the left, and in the rear as far as to the confines of the world. It was 9 leagues high. The protecting deities of the universe took flight, but the future Buddha remained unmoved beneath the tree. And the god then assailed him, seeking to break his concentration. Whirlwind, rocks, thunder, and flame, smoking weapons with keen edges, burning coals, hot ashes, boiling mud, blistering sands, and fourfold darkness, the antagonist hurled against the Savior. But the missiles were all transformed into celestial flowers and ointments by the power of Gautama's 10 perfections. Kamamara then deployed his daughters, Desire, Pining, and Lust, surrounded by voluptuous attendants. But the mind of the great being was not distracted. The god finally challenged his right to be sitting on the immovable spot, flung his razor-sharp discus angrily, and bid the towering host of the army to let fly at him with mountain crags. But the future Buddha only moved his hand to touch the ground with his fingertips, and thus bid the goddess Earth bear witness to his right to be sitting where he was. She did so with 100, 1,000, 100,000 roars, so that the elephant of the antagonist fell upon its knees in obeisance to the future Buddha. The army was immediately dispersed, and the gods of all the worlds scattered garlands. Having won that preliminary victory before sunset, the conqueror acquired in the first watch of the night knowledge of his previous existences. In the second watch, the divine eye of omniscient vision. And in the last watch, understanding of the chain of causation. He experienced perfect enlightenment at the break of day. Then, for 7 days, Gautama, now the Buddha, the enlightened, sat motionless in bliss. For 7 days he stood apart and regarded the spot on which he had received enlightenment. For 7 days he paced between the place of the sitting and the place of the standing. For 7 days he abode in a pavilion furnished by the gods and reviewed the whole doctrine of causality and release. For 7 days he sat beneath the tree where the girl Sujata had brought him milk rice in a golden bowl, and there meditated on the doctrine of the sweetness of nirvana. He removed to another tree, and a great storm raged for 7 days. But the king of serpents emerged from the roots and protected the Buddha with his expanded hood. Finally, the Buddha sat for 7 days beneath a fourth tree, enjoying still the sweetness of liberation. Then he doubted whether his message could be communicated, and he thought to retain the wisdom for himself. But the god Brahma descended from the zenith to implore that he should become the teacher of gods and men. The Buddha was thus persuaded to proclaim the path, and he went back into the cities of men, where he moved among the citizens of the world, bestowing the inestimable boon of the knowledge of the way. The Old Testament records a comparable deed in its legend of Moses, who, in the 3rd month of the departure of Israel out of the land of Egypt, came with his people into the wilderness of Sinai, and there Israel pitched their tents over against the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called unto him from the mountain. The Lord gave to him the tables of the law, and commanded Moses to return with these to Israel, the people of the Lord. Jewish folk legend declares that during the day of the revelation, diverse rumblings sounded from Mount Sinai.
Flashes of lightning, accompanied by an ever-swelling peal of horns, moved the people with mighty fear and trembling. God bent the heavens, moved the earth, and shook the bounds of the world, so that the depths trembled, and the heavens grew frightened. His splendor passed through the 4 portals of fire, earthquake, storm, and hail. The kings of the earth trembled in their palaces. The earth herself thought the resurrection of the dead was about to take place, and that she would have to account for the blood of the slain she had absorbed, and for the bodies of the murdered whom she covered. The earth was not calmed until she heard the first words of the Decalogue. The heavens opened, and Mount Sinai, freed from the earth, rose into the air, so that its summit towered into the heavens, while a thick cloud covered the sides of it and touched the feet of the divine throne. Accompanying God on one side appeared 22,000 angels with crowns for the Levites, the only tribe that remained true to God, while the rest worshipped the golden calf. On the second side were 60 myriads, 3,550 angels, each bearing a crown of fire for each individual Israelite. Double this number of angels was on the third side, whereas on the fourth side they were simply innumerable. For God did not appear from one direction, but from all simultaneously, which, however, did not prevent his glory from filling the heaven as well as the earth. In spite of these innumerable hosts, there was no crowding on Mount Sinai, no mob. There was room for all.
As we soon shall see, whether presented in the vast, almost oceanic images of the Orient, in the vigorous narratives of the Greeks, or in the majestic legends of the Bible, the adventure of the hero normally follows the pattern of the nuclear unit above described: a separation from the world, a penetration to some source of power, and a life-enhancing return.